But it's time we got back to the scholars and to their use of the dictionaries. Asked, what is Buddhism? Off they go. Consult the dictionaries row on row. Sanskrit, Tibetan, Pali, German too. So why do they consult them? Or rather, what do I mean by saying in the poem that they consult them? The Buddha's teaching, that is to say the Dharma, is found in the Buddhist scriptures. And those scriptures consist of words. And the mere scholar thinks that if you've understood the words, you've understood the scriptures. He thinks that if he's understood the words in which the teaching finds expression, he's understood that teaching itself. So he just consults the dictionaries in order to find out the meaning of the words and the meaning of Buddhism. Not only that, he consults the dictionaries as though it was the only thing to do. So, in other words, within the context of the poem, scholars means those people who think you've understood Buddhism when you've understood the words that Buddhism uses, especially the words that Buddhism uses in the Buddhist scriptures. When those words are contained in a book, a text, or a palm leaf manuscript. So a scholar in this sense means one who believes that you can know what Buddhism is without practicing it, without experiencing it, and without contact with others who also are practicing it. Of course, I'm not saying that consulting dictionaries is of no help at all in our attempt to understand Buddhism. That would be to go to the opposite extreme. What I'm saying is that consulting the dictionaries is by no means enough. Understanding the words in which the Dharma finds expression is by no means enough. The words by themselves are not the Dharma. And this is perhaps why in the Lankavatara Sutra the Buddha is represented as saying that from the night of his enlightenment to the night of his parinirvana, he has not uttered one single word. So much then for the first four lines of the poem. They envisage a certain situation. They describe what scholars, mere scholars, do when asked, what is Buddhism? They consult the dictionaries. They write books and articles based simply on a knowledge of the words of the scriptures. But how do we feel when we get that sort of answer to our question? An answer just based upon words? Well, we feel frustrated. And sometimes we feel very frustrated indeed. We've asked a serious question. Perhaps we really did want to know what Buddhism is. I've personally met people who were actually put off Buddhism by the kind of books on Buddhism which they had read. The books were just too dry, too scholarly, too abstract, too academic. So what did they conclude? They concluded, Buddhism is not for me. This is much less likely to happen nowadays. Nowadays there are good books on Buddhism written by scholars who are also practicing Buddhists. I'm thinking of works like Reginald Ray's Buddhist Saints in India. But at the time I wrote my poem, well, quite a lot of the books on Buddhism that were available were written just by scholars. So naturally, people sometimes felt very frustrated. In biblical phrase, they had asked for bread and been given a stone. I remember a rather sad case of this sort of thing. It happened soon after the mass conversion to Buddhism of Dr. Ambedkar's followers. And I remember I had a very good friend who was himself a follower of Dr. Ambedkar. He was either about my own age, maybe a little older. This was in Bombay. We met in Bombay. And he was a very good friend of mine. I think I can say I was quite fond of him. He was a little skinny sort of man, a little bit fiery, and he happened to be a lecturer in Pali, in a college in Bombay. So after the mass conversion, he thought, well, we should start up classes on Buddhism in the college where he happened to be teaching, and he asked my cooperation, so I agreed, because I wanted to help him. Now, perhaps I should also mention, just to throw a little light on the sort of person he was, that some years later he got into his head the idea that he should do just what the Buddha did. So he decided he'd get married. He'd have one son, and then he'd leave his wife and son and become a bhikkhu. Well, he was a very determined sort of person, and believe it or not, that is exactly what he did. He did get married, he did have one son. I suppose he thought it very lucky it wasn't a daughter. And a little while later he went forth. He became a bhikkhu, and I continued to know him as a bhikkhu. But development lay some years in the future. Anyway, we got together this class in Buddhism, and it was divided into two parts. And I was just supposed to give a little talk on Buddhism during the first half, and he's going to teach Pali grammar, during the second half. So we got along, about 30 or 40 people to begin with. And we had to start at, 8 o'clock, because the people who came along were mostly mill workers. They didn't finish work until 8 o'clock in the evening. They were mostly illiterate. They'd become, as it were, converted as a part of Dr. Ambedkar's program of mass conversion. They didn't know anything about Buddhism. Some of them hardly knew how and why they'd been converted. But anyway, they thought they wanted to know something about Buddhism. They really did want to know. So we had them coming along. So I gave my little talk, and then afterwards, my friend, the professor, a lecturer in Pali, he'd start giving his lesson in Pali grammar. And he used to go on and on and on. And in the end, after a few weeks, my Dharma talk got squeezed out completely. It was Pali grammar and Pali grammar and Pali grammar. Because he thought, the Buddhist scriptures, because he was a Theravadin, are written in Pali. So if you want to learn Buddhism, you've got to read the Pali scriptures. And if you are to read the Pali scriptures, you've got to know Pali. And if you want to know Pali, you've got to do the grammar. So he was very logical and a very determined person. So here was he, night after night, just hammering away at the Pali grammar. And he used to make these people, these poor tired men, after the full day's work, recite all the declensions and conjugations and get them all by heart. And he'd drill them like anything. And afterwards he says to me, he said, Sangharakshita, I love teaching Pali grammar. But the result was that after a few weeks, nobody came anymore. Nobody came anymore. So I thought, this really does illustrate the sort, in a very graphic way, at a very basic level, the sort of thing that I've been talking about. These people wanted bread. They wanted roti. They wanted chapati. But my friend, with the best of intentions, he only gave them a stone. He was, at that stage, at least just a scholar. A very good one. He knew his Pali grammar, back to front. And he used to blaze with enthusiasm when he was doing all this declining and conjugating. But the others just didn't catch the fire. So, we lost, he lost, all those students, all those people who might well have, you know, imbibed something of the Dharma. They must have felt really quite puzzled as to what was going on. They must have felt a bit frustrated, even a bit angry, yeah? If they did, well, I wouldn't blame them, huh?